Down syndrome. They put the baby in the NICU, kept it there so long I have real doubts about whether they were not doing medical malpractice. And the woman was accused, reported to child welfare, and accused of abusing and neglecting her child, even though she had been in medically approved methadone treatment. And we did. We won a decision from the New Jersey Supreme Court saying that methadone treatment per se is not, a pregnant woman obtaining methadone treatment is not per se child abuse. Unfortunately, they keep the door open, and so we have to go back because the court said, well, but we really don't want to let these moms off the hook. So maybe if she didn't get into treatment quickly enough, you can treat her, who did everything she could to have a healthy baby, as somebody the state can supervise, surveil, and control. What people don't understand about the child welfare system, and this is one of the things people should watch for, is that they basically can put people on parole without ever having arrested or convicted them. In other words, they say, if you want to keep your kid or if you don't want to be dragged into court to have to prove you can keep your kid, then you better let us come into your house this many times. You better go to parenting classes, whether or not you need the parenting classes. You have to go to drug treatment, whether or not you need drug treatment. You might have to stop getting the methadone that is working for you because the judge doesn't thinks methadone is another form of an illegal drug or another form of dependency, which is wrong. So what we see around the country is as legalization happens in Colorado and other places, the backlash, and there's always a backlash, is taking place against pregnant women and parents.
That was an interview I had with Lynn Paltrow. She's the founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. They're on the web at advocatesforpregnantwomen.org. This is Doug McVeigh for KBOO News.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid. With each passing year, the words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. become more and more necessary to remember. With this in mind, the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Foundation members would like to invite you, your family, and friends to their 31st anniversary and tribute to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Monday, January the 18th, broadcast live from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Highland Christian Center in Portland. As in years past, there will be a variety of local and regional choirs, performers, and entertainers, all paying homage to the work and legacy of Dr. King and our efforts to keep his dream alive. So remember, Monday, January the 18th at the Highland Christian Center, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and of course, right here on KBOO FM radio.
The greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. This is Jamie Partridge, your host. We'll be hearing tonight from the Community Alliance of Tenants, and about beating apathy in your workplace. Here with Katrina Holland of the Community Alliance of Tenants. Good evening, Katrina.
Hello, good evening.
I'm hoping to spend some time tonight finding out about what is the Community Alliance of Tenants and what is the renter's state of emergency that you all have declared. First of all, tell me, Katrina, about the Community Alliance of Tenants.
Sure. So Community Alliance of Tenants is Oregon's only statewide tenant-led, tenant-serving, tenant-directed organization that focuses on education and the empowerment of tenants' rights in the state of Oregon. I mean, we're based in Portland, so a lot of our work is in Portland, but we do serve tenants statewide. Our primary focus is empowering tenants through a three-pronged strategy. The first is tenant education, in which case we operate a renter's rights hotline where tenants can call regarding their individual situations, receive some tips and some information regarding landlord-tenant law. Though, let me clarify, we are not lawyers. So we just kind of tell people what the law says and give them referrals if need be for any specific legal advice, that kind of thing. But we advise them on what tenant landlord says regarding their rights and responsibilities in their situation, come up with an action plan that's going to address the situation, and then follow up with them after some time has gone by to see if the information that we've given is helpful. We also operate renters' rights workshops, which are workshops directed around landlord, tenant law, fair housing, pretty much anything tenant related, renter state of emergency, etc., where we talk about rights and responsibilities as tenants, and for landlords, kind of like a crash course, I guess you could say, in landlord tenant law. We talk about things like getting your deposit back, paying your rent on time, the fees that landlords can charge, the fees that they cannot charge, things of that nature, how to protect yourself in instances of fair housing, where to go if you find yourself in a fair housing situation and being discriminated against as a protected class, things like that. And then we also do some tenant education kind of ad hoc as things come about. We have Tenant Tip Tuesday, which we use our social media platforms for, where we give just different tips regarding landlord-tenant law and things that are specific to tenants at that particular time based off of what's going on in the hotline. And we have educational materials and publications that we have available on our website for free, those kinds of things. So that's tenant education. We also do a lot of tenant organizing, and that's kind of what's called our Safe Housing Project or Leadership Development program, where we allow tenants who have gone through the hotline or who have just heard about CAT in general and find ways to plug in to CAT to advocate for social justice or housing justice under the lens of social justice. So we advocate for things like enhanced inspections program, which we won most recently with the Bureau of Development Services. We advocate for money for tenant education because, you know, the city invests in landlords and developers. They should invest in tenants, too. We advocate for just cause evictions against no cause evictions. We advocate for a variety of issues. Our tenants tell us what is most prioritized for them, and then we respond accordingly.
So tell us about the renter's state of emergency, which you all declared back last summer, right?
Yes.
Okay, what's that? What is it?
So renter state of emergency is exactly like this tenant organizing piece that I was just describing. We were receiving calls on the hotline and getting information from our tenant leaders in the community who were seeing rampant, widespread, no-cause evictions. We're talking building-wide where there are several tenants, 16, 20, 50 units that are completely evacuated due to the sale of a building or something of that nature because the landlord wants to flip it and make more money and charge higher rents. We've also heard of rampant rent increases. We're talking 50, 80%, sometimes 100% increases on rents that are basically evicting people economically. It's been going on for a really long time, and we've been fighting it for a really long time, I'd say at least for the last 4 or 5 years. But it reached a fever pitch this summer. We were getting call after call after call, and receiving threats of self-harm, which we would normally get maybe once or twice a year. It's happening once or twice a month. At one point, it was once a week, so we were having to train our staff on that. And it was just, we saw, this is really bad, and I don't think elected officials know about this, and so we need to speak out as tenants and say, hey, there's something really bad going on
here.
When
you say threats of self-harm, you're talking about suicide.
Yes, suicide. I don't want to live here anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here anymore. I don't have a place to live. I can't find a place to live. I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know how, things of such nature. It's pretty devastating. We're talking seniors taking half of their medication because they can't afford rent anymore or not taking their medication at all. We've heard stories of families having to throw out their entire life's collections of furniture and mementos and things like that in the dumpster because they didn't have enough time to be able to move out, and it was just way too much. So we held a press conference on September 15th announcing the renter state of emergency, asking the government entities, we specifically were thinking Multnomah County, but it turned out the city responded, with a moratorium on no-cause evictions for 1 year, and an increase in the notice period from 30 or 60 days, depending on how long the person has lived there, for rent increases above 5% to be increased to 1 year. And the reason why we did that is because rent control is not possible, right? There's a state preemption against rent control. And so,
meaning that the city of Portland cannot pass a law controlling rents or stabilizing rents because the state of Oregon prohibits it.
Correct.
So the only way for that to change would be for the state legislature.
Exactly.
To change it.
Exactly. So we made that announcement. Less than 24 hours later, Commissioner Saltzman's office came out with what's called the 90-day ordinance now that went into effect November 13th of this year, where any rent increases above 5% have a 90-day notice period, no matter how long you've lived there. And if there's a no-cause eviction or a no-cause termination of somebody's lease, then they have to give 90 days notice. It's not what we want. We think it's a step in the right direction. And we're going to continue to work for better.
So I understand, looking at your website, that fighting for just cause evictions is a major campaign for you right now.
Yes.
Can you talk to us about that? What's a just cause eviction?
Sure. So just cause evictions is a project that that CAT has been working on for several years. It was launched a couple years ago in the hopes of eliminating no-cause evictions, making it illegal on the state level. That didn't happen for a number of reasons. There's various stories of why, but we're hoping to launch that again very, very soon. Renter state of emergency kind of feeds into that, where we're asking for the moratorium on no-cause eviction. There is some ray of hope that there could be some kind of enhanced protections for no-cause evictions at the state level in 2016, in the short session.
The short session meaning February, the month of February, which is coming up a month from now.
Right, correct.
So tell us about that.
So renter state of emergency is going to go statewide. Mm-hmm. We're asking the state for a moratorium on no-cause evictions for 1 year. We're also asking for increased notice period and enhanced protections for renters. That could mean a myriad.
Notice for what?
For rent increases.
Rent increases.
Yeah,
over 5%.
Or no-cause evictions. There are a myriad of things on the table.
Uh-huh. There are actually bills that are being introduced?
That are being formed, yes.
That are being developed at Legislative Council as we speak.
Correct.
Yes.
And January 9th, there will be some legislators. There's no particular location yet. We're waiting to hear back from the hosting representative's office where the location is going to be. But on January 9th, people will have an opportunity to hear a little bit about it, give some perspective, give some input on what those bills or that bill
This is a hearing in Salem?
No, it's going to be here in Portland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so people, if they want to participate in that, they should contact
us.
Community Alliance of Tenants. Mm-hmm. By the way, what is your phone number?
Sure. 503-460-9702.
Again, please?
503-460-9702.
And it would be on your website as well, I imagine.
It'll either be on the website or Facebook, one of the two. Or both.
And so what is your Facebook page called?
Community Alliance of Tenants.
And what is
the
your,
Community Alliance of Tenants.
The Community Alliance of Tenants. And what is your website?
www.OregonCAT.org.
OregonCAT. And the hosting representative is Alyssa Kenny-Geyer. Is
correct.
That correct?
Mm-hmm.
Here from Portland. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Great. So that's the issue of no-cause evictions or just-cause evictions and unreasonable rent hikes.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, let me clarify the Just Cause Evictions campaign. If we're unable to get something in the short session, we're going to go hard in 2017. So we're kind of looking at 2016 as laying the groundwork.
Do you hope to get more from local government? Are you pressing on the local county or city or metro for Anything with regard to evictions or
yes, absolutely,
or rent hikes? Mm-hmm. What are you doing about that?
We're participating in the conversation around no cause or just cause evictions, rent increases, rent stabilization techniques, etc. There's lots of conversations going on. Granted, that is Justin's field. Mm-hmm. He handles most of mm-hmm. that. So I can't speak to it directly as well as he can, but I know that there's definitely some simultaneous conversations going on at the state level and city level.
So
and county.
How can our listeners get involved with this conversation or put in pressure on the appropriate elected officials? And of course you want to get elected officials
yes.
locally to put pressure on the elected officials in Salem,
correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you mean so like a city council resolution or a, you know, whatever thing, those kinds of things are in the works, huh?
I don't know. That those are the kinds of details I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. But I do know as far as plugging people in, yeah. our organizing department is constantly looking for stories from people to be able to share with elected officials,
okay.
with media, and to actually talk with some of them to mm-hmm. help with the formulation of some of these policies, mm-hmm. whether it's a resolution, whether it's a bill, whether it's legislation, et cetera. So we're asking folks to email mm-hmm. displacement@OregonCat.org.
Displacement at uh-huh. OregonCat.org.
Yes, and right. email your story, email your availability. If you would like to speak with elected officials or the media, let us know to what extent we can use your information and your availability to come if necessary.
Great. Mm-hmm. You've been listening to KBOO Portland Labor Radio interview with Katrina Holland, the Deputy Director of the Community Alliance of Tenants, about the renters' state of emergency. So from looking at your website, it looks like there are three areas where Community Alliance of Tenants is focused. One is, three major big picture areas. One is the shortage of affordable housing.
Absolutely.
Particularly for low-income people.
Mm-hmm.
This eviction rash of evictions, this emergency of evictions, whether they're economic evictions or no-cause evictions,
mm-hmm.
and then maintenance.
Correct.
Getting landlords to repair.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed in looking at your history that Community Alliance of Tenants has fought to make it easier for folks who are low-income and do qualify for Section 8 housing to get into housing. That is, landlords are no longer allowed to discriminate against
correct.
Applicants on the basis of there being Section 8. Do you want to explain what that is, what Section 8 housing is? And this happened in just last year, a Fair Housing Act of 2014.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it is now, source of income for housing is now a protected class.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody receives a subsidy directly, as in a voucher, or if somebody lives in, or somebody has lived in public housing, or something of that nature, the landlord is not allowed to discriminate on that person based off of their status.
Did you say source of income?
Yes, source of income.
But also their past housing situation?
Well, yeah.
For example, if they were homeless, can they be discriminated against?
I don't think the law speaks to that directly.
Uh-huh.
But I do know that source, like, if the source of your income is sectionation or housing choice voucher, et cetera, a landlord is not allowed to discriminate mm-hmm. against you.
And what is the status of Section 8 housing? I understand that for years, the waiting list was years long to get
yeah.
Section 8, even though so many people qualify.
Correct.
Is that still the situation?
Still the situation.
And
from what I hear, yes.
And it's basically because of cutback in federal funds over the years.
That and the increasing need. I mean,
yeah.
you're in labor. You know,
yep.
wages have not kept up at all.
Right.
At all with
yep.
the cost of living.
Basically, 40% of workers are in poverty at
right.
this point.
I just saw something recently that said half the country is either in or extremely near to poverty.
Yep.
And in Oregon, that's
That's why some of us are at the heart of the fight for $15 minimum. So tell on this third focus of Community Alliance of Tenants on maintenance. On maintenance and the safe housing project. I noticed on your website that you had organized tenants in 50 buildings, 50 apartment buildings, to put effectively put pressure on landlords to keep up those apartments. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So the safe housing project, it is and was a building-based organizing tool where we mobilize. Hopefully all, but most of the time it's most or some of the tenants to work together to put pressure on the landlord to when needed evictions.
When needed maintenance.
Needed maintenance, or excuse me, yes, needed maintenance, not needed evictions. And so that is, we look for buildings who are in substandard living conditions. So we're talking pests, we're talking mold, we're talking just unsafe living conditions that the landlord has refused to work with or to repair. And we work with the tenants through a pretty specific strategy in organizing them to either write a letter or go to the landlord or potentially ask for inspections or report any violations of the law, referral service, those kinds of things to organize them and get the needed repairs that they need. And so there we just recently, actually, I can talk about a building in North Portland where there were several atrocious repair issues. We're talking pests. I believe radon was an issue at one point. Mold, all kinds of violations, and we worked with some of the tenants to write a letter to the landlord and also to approach the Bureau of Development Services to do inspections. They inspected six units, came back obviously with a myriad of violations, put pressure on the landlord to fix them, but there were other issues in the building. We used the enhanced inspections program where they inspected 20 more units, found additional violations, which we just got the report, I believe, this week, and we're going to put pressure on the landlord to fix it.
And oftentimes when individuals ask for these kinds of repairs, the landlord will evict, will retaliate. And what you're doing is you're organizing people collectively to do this together.
To protect them.
So they have a better chance of not, and of course it's illegal to evict people for
retaliation. But the burden is on the tenant to prove retaliation,
right,
which is the issue.
It's difficult.
So, yeah. It's very difficult.
And since we do have no cause evictions in Oregon, it's the landlord can say, well, it's not about the repairs, it's because something else.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I've gotten story after story, anecdotally, from friends, from family, from the hotline where the landlord has said to them, if you cause any trouble, you know, we're going to evict you. If you do this, I'm going to evict you. Those kind of, I mean, it's out there for sure. And that's why we, on the hotline, we talk about, and in our education program, documentation, document everything as much as possible.
Safe housing project. Right. Well, we're running out of time here. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk with Katrina Holland,
Thanks.
Deputy Director of Community Alliance of Tenants.
I hope I was some help. I know that there are some details that Justin has that I don't have, but I hope it was
helpful.
So
if people want to get involved or get in touch, again, what are the ways to contact the Community Alliance of Tenants?
Sure. So for issues related to your tenancy, where you have some questions about your particular situation, either repair or evictions or whatever, basically give us a call. That number is, 503-288-0130 is our renter's rights hotline if you have questions about your specific situation as a renter. And then if you would like to call our office line with any questions, the number to reach us is 503-460-9702. Our website has information about the organization and also some educational materials for your particular situation on www.oregoncat.org. That's O-R-E-G-O-N-C-A-T GONCAT.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter is Cat Oregon, at Cat Oregon, and you can shout out to us there. And then, of course, if you want to participate in Rent Your State of Emergency, sharing your story with elected officials or with media or plugging in the Rent Your State of Emergency campaign, please email displacement@OregonCat.org. Again, that's displacement@OregonCat.org.
All right. Thank you, Katrina Holland, Deputy Director of the Community Alliance of Tenants.
Thank you.
Next up, Beating Apathy. This is an article from the Stewards' Corner in Labor Notes, November 2015. Do you ever feel like you're the only one who cares about the union? Like none of your coworkers would lift a finger to help? Like your workplace is bogged down in apathy? It's a common gripe. In Labor Notes workshops, we often asked union members to make a list of the reasons why people don't get involved where they work. Typical answers include lack of time, no knowledge of how to do it, the union's not open, there's no easy way in, conflicts between groups, conflicts between individuals. My coworkers feel that nothing will change. They think everyone else is apathetic. They're looking for individual solutions. And the big one, fear. Sound familiar? It might feel like your coworkers don't care, but push a little bit and that's never really true. Everyone cares about something at work. Just about everyone cares about their wages, for instance. No one's indifferent to whether their shift is miserable or pleasant. It's impossible not to care. Could it be that for most of your coworkers, everything's great at work? Maybe they're completely secure about their jobs, love their supervisors, make excellent money with terrific benefits, have no worries about downsizing or layoffs, face no health hazards on the job, are confident about their retirement. If so, quit trying to organize and get another hobby. But it's more likely that people are scared or feel powerless and directionless. They say everything is fine because they don't believe it can change. Organizing is the antidote. So, when you're assessing why more people haven't stepped up to take on the boss, it's important to look at your situation carefully and find out what the actual reasons are. You have to diagnose the problem before you can write the prescription. If it's not apathy, but what is it? What's the real problem? Here are some ways to understand what looks like apathy and to respond to it. No one seems to care. It's hard to see how things could change. No one's willing to do anything. No one comes to meetings. Okay, no one seems to care. Everyone cares about something, but that something might not be what you expect. Pick out a few people at work who you'd like to know better, make a point of talking with them, and find out what's on their minds. Maybe the drug testing policy that's really grinding your gears isn't at the top of their list because something else is bugging them more. A mean supervisor, a crushing workload, a safety hazard, a toothache and no dental plan, a shift schedule that means they hardly see their kids, being forced to defend a stupid policy to customers. The only way to find out is by listening. Show them respect and understanding. When they feel that from you, they're more likely to respect the things that you care about. It's hard to see how things could change. Or maybe your coworkers are just as bugged by the drug testing policy as you are, but it seems too big to tackle. The boss has done a good job of putting out the idea that the decision is final, and fighting the inevitable sounds like a frustrating waste of time. It's perfectly reasonable that people feel this way, especially if their workplace has always felt powerless and disorganized. People are used to going along to get along. If your coworkers have never felt strength in numbers or seen a group action change even something small, Why would they believe they could change something big? As an organizer, your job is to inspire your coworkers with a credible plan to win. But this doesn't mean you have to be a great talker. Actions speak louder than words. Mostly, you'll need to show, not tell, your coworkers that change is possible. That is, prove it to them with action. That usually means starting with small actions and issues at first, things you can win with the people you have so far, taking just a small step out of their comfort zone, farther each time. When it works, more people will be drawn in, and as they participate, their confidence will grow. Hopelessness can be a strong habit. It's easier to break a habit with group support. Bringing people together can help individuals get past their discouragement. No one's willing to do anything. Have you asked them personally to do something specific? Most of us aren't natural-born organizers. Many of your coworkers won't initiate activity, but they will respond if asked directly by someone they trust. Figure out some very small, specific requests and personally approach a coworker. At first, it might be as simple as answering a survey, coming to lunch with other workers to discuss a problem, or signing a group letter. But be respectful of time constraints in their lives and show lots of appreciation for anything they're willing to do. This attitude of respect will make them comfortable doing more in the future. No one comes to meetings. Think about how people are notified about meetings. An email or a notice on the bulletin board isn't a good method. Personal, face-to-face invitations are the very best. Divide up your workplace. Find several other people to share the work of inviting people individually. Also, consider the practical things that could make meetings more accessible. Scheduling, location, childcare, language. And when people do come to meetings, the meetings had better be pleasant and productive. Or